Speaking of which, we are joined right now by a senior writer for ESPN. He is the author of four books, including three New York Times bestsellers. His most recent book is entitled Belichick. It is out right now. It's a great book. Ian O'Connor is my guest. Ian, great to have you back on. How are you?
Hey, Jim. How's it going?
Good, good. Good to talk to you, Ian.
You too.
Now, you literally wrote the book on Bill Belichick, and you and I spoke earlier this season about that book and about him. But take me back to Sunday night. After that game, what did you see when you saw Bill Belichick? I mean, after they won, did that look like the Belichick that most people are accustomed to seeing?
No, and he doesn't, as you know, Jim, in the workplace 24/7, he's going to be that one-dimensional character that he created long ago, and that is that robotic tone, those flat-line responses at press conferences where he says as little as possible, and it's by design. He just doesn't want to ever give away any information or any thoughtful response generally to questions, even in moments of great glory and triumph like Sunday night. But afterward, I just followed him around a bit, and you know, human interactions with people, conversations that flow easily, hugs, posing for pictures. He didn't do a lot of that, but more than people would imagine, I guess, just based on his public persona. I think there are just a lot of people around the country, and I wanted to get this across in my book, that have no idea that there is a little bit of a Jekyll and Hyde thing going on with Belichick, and that human side of him, really, he only shows to that inner circle of friends and associates he has away from the facility.
Yeah, I was going to say, Ian O'Connor, my guest, I was going to say, Ian, that in your piece, you described that as, quote, human Bill. So if you had to guess, how often does human Bill show up during an NFL season, and why doesn't he let more people see human Bill?
Well, I think he shows up in his office, behind locker room walls and doors at that facility at Gillette, where he's a lot better one-on-one with players than anyone would really suspect who doesn't know him. And he was not that way, Jim, in Cleveland when he had the four losing seasons out of five. I talked to many former Browns players for my book, and they basically said to a man that we never thought he cared about us as people, that he didn't care about our families, he only cared about us and what we could do for him on Sundays. He changed in New England. It was pretty clear early on that he realized that was a mistake in his approach, and he did try to reach out at least away from the public arena, that behind closed doors, he would try to reach out and connect with his players as human beings. So he doesn't show it really ever for the cameras, but in private, he's pretty good. Listen, there's no way he could be the way he is for the cameras in his news conferences all the time, or he'd never be able to inspire these ever-changing circle of players to perform at the highest level for basically 18 years. So I think he's underrated in that aspect of his coaching.
I think that's critical. That's a key point, which I'll get to in a minute. Ian O'Connor joins us. His most recent book is called Belichick. It is out right now. Now, Ian, in a moment that's now carved into the hearts of Chiefs fans, Kansas City had that game won with that interception, only to have it called back because Dee Ford had lined up in the neutral zone. During this run, the Pats have had numerous moments like that, though. The tuck rule, Russell Wilson on the goal line, moments that seem like they're lucky. But are they? Is it luck or is it something else?
They weren't lucky in Super Bowl 42, where it seemed like if only one of 17 things had gone their way against the Giants, they finished as the greatest team ever at 19-0. I think there are moments, if Welker holds on to the ball in the second Super Bowl against the Giants, they win that one too. So they've had some bad breaks as well. They got a great break against Seattle when Wilson threw the ball, but I don't think they're lucky, and of course, as Branch Rickey once said, luck is the residue of design, right? I think the Patriots are about design, not luck, and just execution and precision, and they treat every day in the offseason, in preseason, as Game 7 of the World Series, and I just don't think any other franchise does it to that extent, and that's what I think separates Belichick and the Patriots from everyone else in the NFL.
All right, so it's the ninth Super Bowl trip for Belichick and Brady. We're so used to it by now, we're almost numb to the whole thing. You have been around sports a long, long time. You've seen everything there is to see. Have you ever seen a more impressive run than this from a head coach?
Jim, I think it's the greatest dynasty in American sports in my lifetime, college or pro. You might say, well, what about Gino Auriemma with the UConn women, John Wooden at UCLA, and even Nick Saban at Alabama? I think in the college game, when you can recruit the best players in America every year, it's a little different. In the pros, of course, you're punished for being good. You pick at the bottom of the barrel in the college draft, and Bill's doing that every year. So for him to have won five championships, to be going to his ninth Super Bowl as a head coach, really 12 overall as an assistant as well, I think it's so much harder to do it today in pro sports, particularly in the NFL, where the whole system is designed to prevent you from having a dynasty. I've never seen anything more impressive than what the Patriots have done since 2001.
Ian O'Connor is the senior writer for ESPN. His most recent book is called Belichick, and you can get it right now. Now, Ian, if you reach a single Super Bowl, that's a remarkable accomplishment. It means you did a hell of a job that year. He's done it so many times that it should be hard to pick his best coaching job, but might this be it? Is it the best coaching job that he's ever done? And if so, what do you think sets it apart?
I think it's in the top three, Jim. I still think 2001 stands alone because he could have gone back to Bledsoe in that first championship season. Obviously, Bledsoe gets hurt against the Jets in that first Sunday after 9/11 that they played football. Brady takes over. You know, Brady's numbers weren't that great. By the time Bledsoe got healthy again in November, a lot of coaches would have gone back to him. And Bill decided to stay with Brady, and it's the best choice he ever made. So to upset the Rams in that Super Bowl, the Tuck Rule game, yeah, they got a little bit lucky on that one, certainly. But Vinatieri had to make the greatest kick in NFL history to win that game against Oakland. I still think that job is number one. But this one this year, when you look at how thin and relatively weak that roster was this year, you can blame Belichick, the GM, I guess, for that. But Belichick, the coach, I watched this team a lot this year because my book was out for obvious reasons. I never thought that they were good enough, really, to get to this point. But they're playing now at such a higher level than they did for most of the season. Despite the dearth of playmakers, they're healthier now than they've been all year, and they're really confident. So I do think they'll beat the Rams in this Super Bowl and get number six.
Ian O'Connor is my guest. All right, then. You know, if we go back into slightly less than 12 months ago, Belichick, of course, had benched Malcolm Butler in the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. The Patriots lose that game, and it seemed like things were about to fall apart. I mean, there were reports of issues between Brady and Belichick, about Gronk being unhappy. The list goes on. How were they able to get everything back together again and to peak at the right time?
Well, it started with Brady coming back because, and listen, there were other reports before my book came out by some great reporters about the friction in that relationship. I added a couple of details and maybe a money quote, but Brady was seriously thinking as late March about walking away because he really had had enough with Belichick's unforgiving, unrelenting style of coaching for 18 years, and the Butler benching maybe was sort of a bit of a final straw. And so and I think that's the reason he didn't go to OTAs. He's the only starting quarterback who didn't. That's a very un-Brady-like thing to do, and I believe he sent a clear message to Belichick about how he felt. But once it got back to football, once their relationship and partnership overcame or survived that moment in time, it worked again. They have the most successful transactional partnership in the history of maybe American team sports, and it works. There doesn't need to be love and affection. So I think once it got back to football and they overcame that tumultuous moment, they were fine, and here they are again, ready to, again, I think they'll win number six. If not this year, at some point they'll get there. And so I'm not surprised that it's happened the way it has.
We're talking to Ian O'Connor for a few more moments. Again, his most recent book is Belichick, and it's out right now. So, Ian, if they win number six right now, then the run of Super Bowl victories started with a win over the Rams, and if they beat them again, could you see any combination of Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, and or Gronk retiring? And would it feel like a poetic end for Belichick and Brady in particular?
Well, I could see certainly Gronk retiring, although he's had a bit of a resurgence of late. Most of the season he's looked physically beaten to hell. So I could see that happening. I think both Belichick and Brady will be back for number seven, even if they win. I think Brady, after sort of inspiring the organization to trade his much younger successor in Garoppolo, that and talking about playing until at least age 45 to quit at age 41 would feel, to me, unlikely that he would do that. And so I think he's going to be back, win or lose. And I would say the same for Belichick, who to me is a young 66. He loves doing what he does. And I think he's got another 4, 5, 6 years in him in this league.
All right, so in terms of the matchup itself, we know about Belichick, the thing that he likes to do, he wants to take away your biggest strength. Of course, the Rams have so many different offensive weapons. How do you think that he'll approach the Rams' offense?
That's a very good question, and before the Chiefs game, I thought he would really focus on Tyreek Hill because of what Hill did to him during the regular season with the three touchdowns, 142 receiving yards. Before the last Super Bowl against the Rams 17 years ago, he told his friend Chris Berman, Marshall Faulk will not beat us in this game. I don't know if he feels the same way about Gurley, but that might be a matchup that he really focuses on. And I don't know if he's going to treat him the same way he did Marshall Faulk, but I wouldn't be surprised.
And then finally, if you were going to give Sean McVay any advice on how to prepare for Belichick and Brady, what would you tell McVay?
Be yourself. Certainly he doesn't need my advice. He's been unbelievable early on in his coaching career, but just whatever you do in this game, just be who you are. Don't be intimidated by the specter of Belichick. A lot of coaches in the NFL are intimidated by him. Tom Coughlin is one who never was, which is why I think he won those two Super Bowls, because he worked with Belichick under Parcells with the Giants. Don't be intimidated and just be yourself.
Ian O'Connor is a senior writer for ESPN. He is the author of four books. Three of them are New York Times bestsellers, and the most recent is Belichick. And you can get that right now. It is out. Ian, great to get caught up. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you, Jim.
Ian O'Connor, my guest. All right, so he likes the Patriots, and he's got some insight. He literally wrote the book on Belichick. Literally.